It was a tough week for the Cowboys. TCU handed the Pokes their first loss in double overtime. It's okay. Bounce back week. Welcome to the Believe in OK State podcast. I am Megan Robinson, joined tonight by Justin Southwell. Our third guy, Eve, is not here because his wife is in labor and he is having a baby. So, Eve, congratulations, Dad. Sad you're not here, but also very happy you're there. Priorities.
Yeah, congrats, buddy. That's we're super excited for you. Take your time. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's a positive after a not great weekend. This is a bright spot heading into what we hope is a redemption week for the Cowboys. As I said, OK State, their first loss this season in double overtime, 43-40. Dropped three spots in the polls to number 11, and they blew a 17-point lead. So I'll just keep it simple. What went wrong?
Well, if you want to keep it simple, I guess the simplest way to put it is they just didn't finish. Really two things that I saw. So number one, we've heard it all offseason, probably the season before even. The success of this team is predicated on how well Spencer Sanders plays. And if he's not 100%, then, you know, what are our expectations for the team at that point? And nobody's questioning his toughness, his desire to win. We know that about Spencer. He's a competitor. But when you're on the road against a now top 10 undefeated team and your star quarterback isn't 100%, you know, that's something that went wrong. And then the second thing is, you know, nobody wants to lose, right? I say that for OSU, but I say that for TCU too. Okay. They're undefeated. They're not going to lay down just because they're down 17 points. OSU didn't do it in the Fiesta Bowl last year against Notre Dame when they were down 20, 21 points. So you have to know your opponent. You know, Max Duggan, think he's going to quit? No, the guy is the epitome of resilience. And, you know, their coach on the sideline, Sonny Dykes, he's yelling, screaming his head off about one of the most insignificant things in that game. Like, he's going to lose his mind before he loses that game. And so you have to know that about your opponent. They're not just going to lay down. They're not going to give up. And so you can't just, you know, pull back the reins and hope for the best.
Last week, Eve talked about making adjustments in all four quarters. And I read a tweet yesterday, I think it was last night. OSU averaged 7.9 yards per play on the first two drives of each half versus TCU. The rest of the game, they averaged 2.7 yards per play. So TCU clearly made the adjustments. I mean, we were sort of texting throughout the game and you and Eve were calling out like they had that open all game. Why were they not attacking that? Like, what should they have done sooner to extend their lead and maintain their lead?
You know, I know that Coach Dunn probably got, and I think he got a lot of criticism for his conservative play calling there at the end of the game. And part of me says it's fair, but part of me says, you know, I don't have a problem with conservative play calling if it works, right? So you got to know the situation when it's going to work. And there have been several times this season that I've seen it. The Baylor game, for example, we threw wide receiver screen after wide receiver screen. It was not working. And I don't know how many times a play has to not work for you to go away from it and to do something else. Same thing against Tech. It seemed like they just kept trying to force the ball to Bray and it just wasn't working. He came out with two receptions total. And so the same thing, you know, for the TCU game, running backs, I think they had somewhere around 9 attempts in the third and fourth quarter where they got 3 yards or less. And so these plays are not inherently bad play calls, but if they're not working in a certain situation, you know, how many times before it doesn't work are you going to switch it up, quit doing the predictable zone reads on first down? When they had success early on in the game, they're dropping back on first down. Spencer's, you know, they're doing, you know, receiver reverse, flea flicker type plays. I'm not saying you have to do that all the time, but whenever you're not predictable like that, they're not prepared for it. They're on their heels. I mean, those are the kind of things that you want to see where it's not as conservative and they're going out. It looks like they're actually playing to win the game.
I think that's the biggest thing, playing to win versus playing not to lose. And you said it yourself, we couldn't get the run game going. Gundy himself after this game called it one-dimensional. He admitted we couldn't get the run game going. TCU was averaging about 5.2 yards per carry, and I think we were averaging right in either high twos or low three, so right around 3 yards per carry, which then if you don't get the run game going, TCU knows you're not going to run the ball, so then they're better protecting the pass game. And what
Right.
really I thought was interesting, we've talked about Oklahoma State being wide receiver U, being a really good receiving room. The lead receiver this week was running back Dom Richardson. So like not having the receivers involved and being able to shut down Brennan Presley, Braylon Greene, Johnson, JP, all those people, to be able to shut those down and have a running back be the key receiver, I think that that is a big reason also why we scored zero touchdowns in the second half.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised to see that stat too. I think Dominic Richardson had two chunk plays on on halfback screens, and so he caught the ball in the backfield. He had great blocking downfield. He was able to make some guys miss and get a lot of yards that way. But and those plays were successful because he's good with the vision of, seeing what's downfield and being able to make those guys miss. Now, to put it simply, if Spencer Sanders, if his shoulder is injured, it's a lot easier to throw it to a halfback in the backfield. It's like a 10, 15 yard pass, versus, throwing it deep downfield. And I know that he did that a few times and had success still through the game. But yeah, whenever you're able to throw a shorter pass in the backfield and Richardson's able to take off, then, what I was wondering was, why did you kind of shy away from that later on in the game? And I think maybe part of it was he was also getting a lot of carries too. And, I don't know. I think a lot of people were calling for let's mix it up a little bit with the running back here. Let's see Gordon. Let's see Nixon get in there for different looks. You've got different types of running backs in different situations. So why are we just relying completely on Dominic Richardson? And, I don't have an answer for that, but obviously he's got some playmaking abilities. You saw it in the passing game even. So why they couldn't continue to get the ball to Presley and John Paul Richardson, who also made some big plays in that game, I'm not 100% sure. I think maybe some of it had to do with Spencer Sanders' shoulder.
Yeah, and I'm going to correct myself. I said Braylon Greene. It's Braylon Presley, Brennan Presley's little brother, and Bryson Greene is a receiver. Lots of B names in that receiving room. So I feel for the
Yeah,
coach. It's so
there's
many B names to
a few
keep
times
straight.
I get like a little confused, even on guys that, it's like Ollie Gordon, right? Colin Oliver, kind of like mixing things up. And they're on different sides of the ball,
Yes.
so it takes a little bit of time for some of these new names
Yeah.
to stick. That's
My
why Gundy
mom.
uses numbers. That's he doesn't have to worry about his
But then
zeros
sometimes you
out
have
there.
two sevens, one on offense, one on defense. It's like, well, which seven are you talking about? So I can now empathize with my mom, who would call my brothers each other's names, and then she would throw the dog name in there too. So apologize, Bryson Green, Braylon Presley, lots of B names. By week 12, I'll hopefully have that
We'll get it down.
all sorted out. And I know that Eve is sort of our resident defensive expert, but he is preoccupied tonight. So I'm gonna, not to put you on the spot here, Justin, but our defense gave up 510 yards, 286 of that through the air. We've talked about the secondary. Eve spoke highly of Jabbar Muhammad. He had some big moments in that game, but how do we fix the secondary heading into Texas?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I could be a coach and get paid millions of dollars to figure that out for us. Now, in all seriousness, I think that really you just gotta stick with the process. Those guys are out there for a reason. They start for a reason. So Muhammad, Jason Taylor, guys like that. Black is back there. Like you guys, I think part of it is that they were faced with an NFL caliber receiver for TCU, and it's just a different level of playing at that point. But yeah, I mean, you're gonna look like that against Texas and some of these other teams in the Big 12. So it's a good test for you, and then just continuing to get those reps at practice, keep that positive mindset. Know that, yeah, they got me this one time, but this next time I'm gonna get them. So, yeah, just stick with it. Honestly, it's a matter of repetition. It's a matter of having confidence. And the plays that you do well, keeping those in your head, playing with confidence, playing with that swagger, you got to have that for defense, or you're just going to get eaten up. We've seen it all the time, probably starting around, gosh, 2010 through 2016, 2017, 2018. Even. I mean, the offenses in the Big 12, they just completely, ran all over those defenses, and there were pretty good defenders out there, but the one that comes to mind, for example, is like I'm blanking on his name right now, but the corner for Nebraska back in 2012, and whenever he's an NFL
That
corner,
Prince Amukamara
there it is, yeah, and so
teamwork.
there you go. Whenever he was against Justin Blackman, those are the matchups you want to see. There were some times that he got the best of Blackman, and there were some times when Blackman got the best of him. So, just being, consistent as much as you can be, and just go from there and just play your best.
The bright spot for me this week in this heartbreaking double overtime loss was once again special teams. Tanner Brown, 4 for 4 on field goals, career long of 52, named Big 12 Special Teams Player of the Week back-to-back weeks. And this is the fourth straight week an OSU player has received that honor. So once again, let's give it up for the special teams holding it down for the Pokes. Brown also ranks first in FBS and kicker scoring with 11 points per game. And Tom Hutton had three punts of 50 yards or more. And we lead the Big 12 in kickoff returns and kickoff return defense. So I feel like, a couple weeks ago, you guys said you want to get back to that special teams best in the country. I think we're getting closer each game.
I definitely think that we may be shifting away from wide receiver you. We're going to be special teams you. So
Hey.
nothing wrong with that. You
All
gotta
three phases matter.
might as well be good. Yeah, be good in that phase too. The thing is, we are really good in all three phases. I think where we are struggling, we're starting to see now, is having that through all four quarters and into overtime if need be. But yeah, just can't let up. Can't go into prevent too early.
And I think in a game, if you watched Alabama, Tennessee, I know that that's SEC, but Alabama's kicker missed a 50-yard field goal, which would have potentially won them the game. So having a kicker like Tanner
Right.
Brown, who was Mr. Reliable, and you honestly, you don't have those in college football. The college football kicking game is a lot different than the NFL. So having somebody that consistent, I really feel is like an ace in your back pocket because not every team has that. And you get into those weird field positions where it's like, well, we can attempt a 52-yard field goal, or we can punt it and hopefully we can pin them down at the one, or maybe we're going to give them a touchback. And it's just basically, you get in those weird, like, do we go for it? Do we not go for it situations. So to have a special teams player like Tom, who can probably pin him within the five, and Tanner, who's
Right.
probably, Mr. Reliable, I think 12 for 12 on field goals this season, it's like, okay, this could make a difference in those games. And then, Spencer's shoulder was a little bit better, then maybe we could have scored a touchdown, but we couldn't complete those passes in overtime to get a first down, which I think also hurt us because we couldn't get the run game going. So, a lot of factors, but
Right.
having a
Yeah.
good kicker, I think, does matter in those tight games.
Yeah, and to touch on Sanders in overtime, you got to give a lot of credit, I think, first and foremost, to TCU's defense in that situation, because they really did step up. There were a few times where his throws were a little bit short to John Paul Richardson, but there were another few times. I know that one of the passes got deflected at the line. There was another pass that hit the receiver in the hands, and then the DB jarred it loose. So those are you just got to give props. Those are plays that TCU beat you on. But then at the same time, Spencer got that pass that converted a fourth down to get all the way down to the 1 yard line. And, that was for the game essentially. And so, you make that play and it's kind of like, there is that back and forth. And we've said it kind of all week on paper, these two teams are so evenly matched. And we saw it play out. I had a little bit more confidence thinking that Oklahoma State was much better. And we did see that they were much better early on in that game. Unfortunately, just ended in a heartbreaking loss in double overtime.
I think it comes back to the adjustments and making adjustments at the right time, knowing when to play conservative. I mean, you saw it in the Utah USC game. Whittingham decides to go for the 2-point conversion for the win, which is a very gutsy move. You could play for overtime, and that's playing the opposite of conservative. That's playing to win. And it paid off for them in the long run. So I think you kind of have to weigh those options, like, what do we have to lose at this point? And last year there were several games where I felt like Oklahoma State won in spite of Spencer Sanders' play. And this year, I do not think that is the case at all. I commend him for playing in this game. I think you could tell he was in a little bit of pain late in the game. And then it's really hard when you're one-dimensional and you don't have your running game is not that effective to rely on a pass when your shoulder is not 100%. I mean, Spencer, he had three total touchdowns. He still played a very good game. So in no way, shape, or form do I think that this was his fault. I just think in all phases of the game, with the exception of special teams, we could have made some adjustments. But the one area where I think we definitely won was in the uniforms.
No joke. Those are some of the worst uniforms. Why are these teams,
The red accents. Ugh.
Baylor and TCU? What's your deal? Why are you wearing out your worst uniforms against obviously the conference's best uniforms? I don't get that. Props to Texas Tech. They came out in some nice uniforms against us, but TCU, what are you doing? Nike, what are you doing? You're better
Yeah.
than that. My
It
gosh. Now I will say, like back in 2013, I sent you that pic and text. Like, that's what you need to do if you're gonna do the whole blood shooting out of your eyes thing. They got that matte black and purple helmet with just a hint of red.
Like the
None of
eye.
this stuff where it's just like,
Yeah.
yeah, coming on your numbers and there's an outline on the logo, just looks so bad. Like, there aren't
Trash.
any teams other than maybe the Toronto Raptors that can pull off red and purple and black together. So it's just stick with your red and, or stick away, stay away from the red. Like, red's just not, it's not good.
And I've been to TCU. I've never been in the TCU bookstore or anything like that. So I don't know if they sell these like red alternate things or if like red is like their accent color. But I will say, I saw someone Photoshop the teal that we wear for basketball sometimes into a football uniform.
Yeah,
So if
I've
you want
seen
to
that
talk
too.
accent colors, OSU, Nike, consider that because that combo on the football field, whoo,
Not bad. And
perfection.
then yeah, you've got the different themes. So I do like that. I think the Native American, where are we going? It's turquoise, I think. There's the turquoise teal debate, I think
Yes.
it, yeah. And
Yes.
then with Miami teams, we saw it, I think was Florida International. They kind of mixed it up and they went with their Miami Vice color scheme on the field. So that's pretty interesting, kind of looking, they're taking them from the Miami Heat and stuff like that. So it's creeping in to football now. We've seen it in basketball. It's probably just a matter of time before we see the turquoise for Oklahoma State.
Nike, if you were watching or listening to this, consider it, throwing it out there. I think it would be amazing, especially with our new turf, the super bright orange. Ugh, it looks so good. But
Oh yeah.
we can so someone make that happen. But enough about last week. We're gonna move forward, looking ahead.
It's a new
Around
week.
a new week, a new week. It is homecoming week. Before we get to the excitement of homecoming, chat a little bit about the Big 12. Unfortunately, we are now sitting in fourth in the Big 12. TCU, K-State, and Texas are all ahead of us. OU gave Kansas their second straight loss and avoided their four-game skid. They put up 701 yards of total offense. Is this the start of OU's bounce back?
It could be. Part of me wants to say, well, it's just Kansas.
But Kansas has
And
been like okay.
they had their backup quarterback out there. But I will say, maybe I can give OU a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. their initial conference games were against some of these top tier teams that you see in the Big 12. And now they're kind of balancing that out a little bit with some of the bottom tier teams. And it could be something that, gets them some momentum going into the rest of the conference play. I think they've got a bye week and then Iowa State. Iowa State's just kind of a wild card. You never know. So maybe after that week, we'll have a little bit of a better understanding as far as where OU might end up at the end of the year. But yeah, that could be the win versus Kansas, that gets the troops rallied up.
To be honest, Oklahoma could lose every game all season, and I would still go into Bedlam nervous. Like
Sure. Yeah.
it's a
It's a
conference game, it's
rivalry.
a rivalry. Like
Yeah.
that, because if that were the obviously that's not the case this season, and it probably won't be the case ever. But if that's your team, like it doesn't matter. If you win that game, it's like, well, we still beat OSU. Like same for us. If we lost every game, but we beat OU, that season would not be a complete waste because you beat OU. Like, so
It's a truth that has been part of, I think, Oklahoma State's fandom for a long time. It was very much like, don't really have a hope in the world, but we can play spoiler to OU, keep them out the national title game. As long as we beat OU, this season is a success. And honestly, for the rivalry aspect, that's what college football is kind of all about. If your team's just not going to be part of it, then why not spoil your rival to make sure that they're
exactly.
not part of
Ruin it for everybody else.
it?
Texas held on against Iowa State. You said Iowa State's kind of the wild card. It wasn't
Yeah.
Quinn Ewers' best game, but he still had 172 yards and 3 touchdowns. Bijan Robinson was held out of the end zone for the first time all season, but he still racked up 135 rushing yards. And this week kicks off 4 straight games against ranked opponents for Texas. So before we get really into the nitty-gritty, like how are you feeling after seeing them play Iowa State and keeping it close?
Texas, it seems to me, based on this year, not just the Iowa State game, that they're a team that really will kind of play to the level of their competition, minus, I guess, the OU game where they completely blew them out, 49 nothing. But if obviously they've got the talent to play with teams like Alabama and barely lose that game. And then they've got, the game against Iowa State. Now, Iowa State, sure, they're getting up, going down to Austin, trying to knock them off, trying to play spoiler, get all that. But yeah, you've got the same guys that you trotted on the field against Alabama, and you almost lose the game to Iowa State. And really, Iowa State was the team that kind of, I mean, they dropped the ball at the end to put them in prime position to win that game. And I kind of expect the same against Oklahoma State. Now, I'm saying all my predictions based on the assumption that Spencer Sanders is going to play and be 100%. But if he's not, that version of Oklahoma State that doesn't look as good, I still think it's a close game. I don't see Texas coming out and just, completely blowing us out of the water, because it's homecoming, and these guys are they're going to be fired up to play. So, and it's against Texas. You got the, like I said, the NFL guys out there. They've got something to prove. And yeah, it's one of those things. You see it in the NFL any given Sunday, kind of the same thing here, just any given Saturday.
What I found interesting when I was reading sort of the pregame notes earlier is that Texas is actually 9-3 in games played in Stillwater, which really surprises me. However, OSU has won the last 6 games following a loss. So a win on Saturday would make it 7 in a row. But I mean, my concern going into this game is, Quinn Ewers is heating up. He has 9 touchdowns and 820 yards, and he's only played in 3 full games this season. 7 of those touchdowns have come in the last 2 games. And then you have Bijan Robinson. We struggled stopping the run last week. He has a 780 yards, 10 touchdowns this season. Like our defensive line, I think they're one of the oldest and most experienced position group defensive line groups in the nation. And they fell a little flat last week. I think they only had 1 sack. if I re read the box score, if I am
Wow.
remembering that correctly. And I remember even the text was like 5 sacks for the D line. I think that was Eve that said that. Maybe it was you. I'm sorry if it was you. But
No, I
like,
think it was Eve. I think, yeah, he was predicting that magical number we want to see. We want to see our defensive line get in the backfield, be aggressive, and bring down guys like Max Duggan and Quinn Ewers. Like, you want to see that to be successful. But yeah, go ahead.
yeah, no, I mean, I guess like, what is your X factor? Because then on receiving side of the ball, they have Xavier Worthy, who has 6 touchdowns on the season, and he's capable of making really big plays. And that makes you question, are they going to target our secondary? So in your opinion, who are the X factors in this game for both teams?
Yeah, for Texas, probably, yeah, that quarterback, it's really interesting, an interesting dynamic. I think that I'm a firm believer as far as what Gundy preaches. You want to see your quarterbacks, especially. It's a very difficult position to play. 15 games minimum before they kind of start getting the ball rolling. And we're seeing the shift in that. Maybe it's a few games less whenever you've got some of these elite level quarterbacks that come in and you're seeing them have success almost immediately. And the X factor, I think, is going to be the defensive schemes from Derek Mason. How are we going to throw this guy off enough where we can disguise our blitzes, where we can disguise our coverages to get him on his heels a little bit before he's able to get into a rhythm? And then you got to rely on your guys that have been there and done that before, who have beaten Texas. Brock Martin, Jason Taylor, hopefully, maybe Trace Ford, he'll make a couple of plays that make you say, wow. You've got the guys to make the plays, and you just pray for the best that they'll step up and do that. And as far as our offense is concerned, I guess I have to be kind of consistent, right, with my everything I just said about Spencer Sanders.
Yeah.
If he is healthy and he plays well, he is the X factor. And then you got, usually a receiver or a running back. We just have guys all over the field that can be that guy. And so it's just a matter of, who wants to show up that day? Who wants to impress the fans in the stands,
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think we need a receiver to step up and have an actual receiver be the leading receiver, not a running back. And I think that, Gundy was kind of saying, not that he doesn't think that Dom Richardson can handle a big load, but like we need other people to step up. So I'm curious to see if Ollie Gordon or maybe some of the other running backs step up and take a little bit of the load off of Dom this week. But I'm feeling really good. We'll get to picks in just a second. But it is a big week. They're bouncing back after a tough loss. I'm feeling good. That home crowd, homecoming weekend. So excited. It's my first homecoming here at
All
Oklahoma
right, let's
State.
go.
So I'm so excited. But what is your favorite homecoming tradition?
I'd have to say, oh, it's pretty tough. Wow, there are so many good ones. My favorite, I guess, would have to just be the orange fountain. I just love that library fountain. Whenever it's orange, it just looks so cool. I don't know, there's just something about it. So, but yeah, you've got to give props to all the Greek houses out there for putting together some nice house decks and making it America's greatest homecoming. But yeah,
Waka's
it's
coming
for
this year. Waka Flocka
Flock
Flame.
is coming. We've got, yeah, homecoming and hoops. It's always fun to rally
Yeah.
around Boynton and the boys. But yeah, I just something about that orange fountain. I don't know, so unique.
Did you watch me kick off Fountain Dyeing on Sunday?
I did.
Did you?
That
Yeah.
was, yeah, you got me fired up.
Yes.
I was like,
Yeah.
this loss to TCU really stings. But this makes it a little bit better.
It was kind of nice having everybody there and just being really excited. And it's, when I was growing up, my mom would have the 24-hour rule. Like, you can be upset about something. When I didn't get in to my 5th grade play in middle school, mom's like, you can be upset, you can cry, whatever, but get over it after 24 hours and you have to move on. So that's sort of how I've approached things. So like, you can be mad about it, but at 6 o'clock for Fountain Dyeing, it was about 24 hours after the TCU loss. So get over it, on to Texas, horns down. But so.
Probably a good rule to live by. It's easier said than done, I think, sometimes, but it's a good
Yeah.
one to live by.
Yeah. Well, game picks for this week. Starting out, picks with Bix. You want me to go Longhorns?
course
I
he
think
did.
he likes the animals, you know. He did get it right last week, the horned frogs. You know, he did that get that right. Let's all
Yeah.
hope that he is wrong. And if he's right, two in a row, my dog is a genius. Eve
And
is taking OSU 38-34. What about you?
that's my guy. See, Eve, he's got it. He knows what's up. Yeah, that's actually a pretty close game. I can definitely see something like that. I think maybe not as high scoring. Well, I say that, but it's right there, you know. I can definitely see it being like a 34, 31 type of game, or even like I don't know, like it could just be like a 1 to 3 point game in my mind, and it could just be a field goal. You know, we've got a clutch field goal kicker. Let's, you know,
Let's go.
establish him as the legend that he is by kicking a last second field goal to win the game. Why not?
Yeah. See, I disagree with you guys. I'm taking the Pokes. Won six straight after a loss. I have faith in Gundy. However, I feel like the energy in Boonpicking Stadium on Saturday is going to be next level. I think they're all like heated after that loss. They're all like, we got to move forward. You know, a lot of their post game, it's like, it's not just a game, but like, got to move forward, got to move on, can't dwell on that 24-hour rule. And I don't want to say it's going to be like a blowout. It's not going to be a 49-0 Texas OU situation, but I think it could be like a 20 or a 42-21 type situation. I think it's going to be a double digit win again. I think the Pokes are
Nice.
going to come out swinging, firing on all cylinders. I think the defensive line is going to get it together, get some sacks. Maybe this will be the five sack game. Get to Ewers, show him what's up, shut down Bijan. Feeling
I'll
good.
take it. I
I'm
would love
feeling
that.
good. I don't
I
know.
would love to not have a stressful cardiac Cowboys kind of game.
There's just
So
something,
I'll go with that.
you know. I hope, I mean, if we're all right, if except for Bixby, obviously, but if they win, we're all right. But I hope that I'm the most right and that it's a big lead, which, you know, like that it's fun when you're winning big and you have are making good plays. So yeah.
So to piggyback off more predictions, do you have a uniform prediction? Are
Oh,
we gonna have
uniform.
any
That's a great
throwbacks? Are we gonna have
question.
I know we're gonna have throwback helmets historically for homecoming. We'll have at least a throwback helmet.
Would they do Pistol Pete to, could they, maybe we'll get the your hat.
I've got the 88 brand
Yeah.
and the 88 jersey repping Barry Sanders here. So
Would
that's
they?
exactly what they wore against Texas in 2018.
Huh.
I could see it again, but I will say this. I kind of shared this also with somebody on Twitter before. Usually what they do for our practice pants, they're retired game pants. So whenever we were practicing back in 2011, we used the 2010 game pants. And then whenever they moved on from the last template to this template, I think in 2016, they used the 2015 game pants. Now they're using the 88 throwback pants that we had from back in 2018. So that tells me that those pants are retired and that we're not going to be seeing the full 88 throwbacks again. But I could be wrong.
Interesting.
They could just, you know, bust out some new ones. Maybe they'll have an orange version of those instead. Or well, I'll say what I think is probably going to happen. I think we will probably see our standard orange white uniform, maybe orange and orange for a special game. And if you remember, we had the Bucking Bronc helmet back in 2014. That was actually not a true throwback helmet. That was based on a throwback helmet. I think we might see the actual version of that this year. So it's the orange version. It's got I guess, the white Bronc rider. And even looked a little bit different. I'm going to try to lock that in as my pick for the uniform prediction this week.
All right, you're the expert, not me. I'm going to double down and stick with my 88 OSU
The
logo.
least polarizing uniforms in Oklahoma State history. Everybody loves those uniforms. And I think a lot of people would be okay if we went back to those full time.
Yeah.
So nobody would hate it if we saw throwback 88 uniforms.
Well, we will see what happens on Saturday. Thank you all for listening to another episode of the Believe in OK State podcast. On behalf of Justin, I'm Meg. Once again, congratulations to our other host, Eve, new dad, baby girl born tonight at some point, we think, we hope. So congrats to you and your wife, Eve. We missed you. Hope to see you back next week. Thanks again for listening, and go Pokes.
Go Pokes.